you know, he also played a Native American flute, and he was down beneath the stands one day before a game, relaxing, you know, playing it, and he claims, you know, that the flute got swatted out of his hands and flew like 5 feet. A lot of, you know, security guards that we spoke with swore up and down that there were ghosts there, particularly Ty Cobb. He was the most talked about, you know, presence, you know, him running the bases at night to, you know, encountering his presence in the hall one day or, you know, hearing his voice. A surprising amount of players that had actual, you know, firsthand stories or believed, you know, that certain paranormal things were going on at either ballparks or spring training sites or hotels.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Banal of America Audio with your host, Tim Banal.
What is going on, my friends? This is Tim Banal of banalofamerica.com with another edition of BOA Audio Season 6. Once again, big, big thanks to our buddy Ian for providing the theme music to this week's edition of the program. Stay tuned to future episodes of the show if you want to hear more tunes from BOA Audio listeners. And if you are a listener out there who has music you'd like to contribute to the program, shoot me a line at boaaudio@hotmail.com, and I'd be happy to give it a listen. Now, let's get down to business on this week's edition of the program. In fact, it is actually part one of two installments of the program you're going to be hearing this week from BOA Audio. It is the first half of our baseball doubleheader. Traditionally, we do the BOA Audio Baseball Special, which you'll be hearing in a few days. I'll talk more about that at the end of the program. Suffice it to say, it is jam-packed with esoteric stars. But I know that a lot of people skip the baseball special, so this year I wanted to try something a little bit different, and I wanted to really try and blend those two worlds together, the worlds of the paranormal and baseball. And I found the perfect guest for that on the program this week, Dan Gordon, the co-author with Mickey Bradley of two books, Haunted Baseball and Field of Screams. And both of those tomes share tales of ghostly encounters that they were told by various baseball players, whether they're legends or up-and-comers. And both books go beyond merely ghost stories and also delve into all kinds of stuff like curses, legends, rituals, and a whole bunch of other stuff like haunted hotels and stadiums. And that's sort of the areas we're going to be discussing here in this conversation. We're going to find out how Dan and his co-author Mickey managed to get these baseball players to share their ghost stories. We'll hear about haunted hotels and international baseball legends and rituals. We'll learn about Babe Ruth and Roberto Clemente ghost encounters. Dan will also share stories he's heard about hauntings at Detroit's Tiger Stadium and Anaheim's Angel Stadium. We'll also learn about secret passageways found beneath Dodger Stadium in L.A., the Chicago Cubs' strange affiliation with California's Catalina Island, and additional stories about baseball players who've had UFO sightings or psychic premonitions. And, of course, that's just a scratch at the surface of all the areas we're going to be covering here with Dan Gordon, looking at the world of haunted baseball from someone who has spoken to hundreds of former and current Major League Baseball players who confided their supernatural tales. Altogether, it's a fun and spooky edition of the program, which melds America's pastime with the paranormal as we explore the world of haunted baseball with Dan Gordon. For those of you who are unfamiliar with Dan Gordon, allow me to provide you with a little background on him. Dan Gordon first experienced the magic of Fenway Park in the summer of 1975, when his father took him to his first baseball game. With a Thomas J. Watson Fellowship, Gordon studied global baseball culture in Japan, the Dominican Republic, Cuba, and Nicaragua. His writings on baseball have appeared in numerous publications, including the Providence Journal and Fort Worth Star. And he's the author of Cape Encounters, Contemporary Cape Cod Ghost Stories. He lives and dies with the Boston Red Sox. His websites are www.hauntedbaseball.com, as well as fieldofscreamsonline.com. Obviously, those allude to the two books that he has co-authored with Mickey Bradley, Haunted Baseball and Field of Screams, both available wherever fine books are sold. be sure to check them out. And with all that said, let's get down to business and throw out the first pitch of the BOA Audio Baseball doubleheader. This interview was recorded on March 9th, 2011. Dan Gordon talks about baseball and the paranormal on BOA Audio Season 6. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of BOA Audio Season 6. And in years past, we've done the baseball special, and we're going to do another baseball special this year. Hopefully you're listening to it in conjunction with this special interview that we're doing here. Because, you know, I get a lot of flack from the paranormal buffs who listen to the program because we do a pure baseball episode, and it doesn't really delve into the world of the paranormal. So I knew that I had to get this guy here on the program, Dan Gordon. He's the co-author of a pair of really fascinating books, Haunted Baseball and the latest book, Field of Screams. And as I said, he's the co-author with Mickey Bradley. And we're going to be talking about ghost stories and baseball and sort of the world of the supernatural and how it has crept into the world of baseball as well. So it's going to be a very entertaining and enlightening interview, I think. And I'm really looking forward to it. And it's been a long time coming. I had a chance to meet Dan about 2 years ago and told him to get him on the show, but it's just taken me forever to get it going. So I'm really excited to finally manage to get him here on the program. Dan, welcome to BOA Audio.
Hey, thanks for having me, Tim.
You know, we'd like to start out with the bio, the background. You know, who is Dan Gordon? How did, I guess, I presume you obviously have an interest in baseball and the paranormal. So how do these dual interests sort of cross paths? And, you know, how did these interests come about in the first place?
I think it kind of was brewing throughout my lifetime. I mean, grew up, you know, with being a Red Sox fan and, you know, under, you know, the cloud of the so-called curse of the Bambino, you know, the idea that the Red Sox were cursed by Babe Ruth for having traded him. And, you know, I don't know if I ever, you know, truly believed it, but you definitely kind of scratched your head at that time. But I also, I've been studying in baseball, you know, since college. I got a grant called a Thomas J. Watson Fellowship, and I studied baseball in Japan and Latin America for a whole year. They gave me $13,000, and I've written this proposal to just kind of compare baseball cultures of different countries. And everywhere I went, I kind of, one of the things that always drew me was kind of the superstitions in those places. And it, like in Nicaragua, kind of the voodoo rituals that fans do and, you know, even like players do, and, you know, kind of sometimes jokingly, but sometimes with some intent as well, you know, and players do get spooked by it. It was kind of a rivalry between the, you know, Pacific Ocean side of Nicaragua and the Atlantic side. And, you know, voodoo kind of played a part in that. And, you know, same thing in Japan, you know, with all these pendants and rituals and prayers that they have and, you know, things they do like sprinkling salt to ward off, purify, you know, a ball field and to ward off evil spirits and, you know, kind of things that are interwoven in the culture, but also in baseball kind of as a way to kind of, you know, protect players and protect their health. And, you know, so I saw a lot of that there and throughout Latin America, and where I traveled in Dominican Republic and Cuba too, and, you know, various rituals there as well. And I came back, I started writing about international baseball, and then I kind of moved out to Cape Cod and to work on a manuscript on international baseball. And while I was out there, I kind of became interested in the ghost stories, and that just kind of, you know, snowballed. And it took me a while to realize that, you know, maybe I could write a book about ghost stories in baseball itself. But a friend of mine, he's an anthropologist and kind of had guided me along when I first got this grant. And I still, you know, good friends with him. Every year we go up to Cooperstown, the Baseball Hall of Fame. They have a research symposium and we talk about our research ideas and our writing. And he had written an article on baseball superstition. He's a former minor league player himself, played in the 60s, and he wrote probably the definitive article on baseball superstition. It's called Baseball Magic, and it's been reprinted perhaps 100 times in various article, you know, magazines and journals and things, and keeps getting updated. And, you know, he said, well, you know, he just asked me, well, aren't there ghost stories in baseball too? And, you know, you always think of baseball, you think of you know, the lively stadiums and, you know, a lot of action going on and, you know, you know, you always hear the metaphors about ghosts in the game, the ghost of the, you know, the baseball Hall of Famers are called immortals and, you know, that kind of thing. And,
yeah,
you know, but to act, you know, I just started wondering whether these stories actually did exist. And, you know, I'm pretty, I mean, nobody's completely well read in baseball. You know, there's so much written about it. You know, you could, in a lifetime, you couldn't possibly digest it all. But I've always kept up adamantly with, you know, I'm obsessed with, you know, reading about it and, you know, studying, you know, knowing what's being written and what's being talked about and watching games and that kind of thing. And I'd never heard of, you know, actual ghost story. And so, besides a couple of hotel stories. And so I just kind of went at it and started, like, I teamed up with another fellow writer. He's also a diehard. He's actually a diehard Yankees fan.
Yeah.
And, you know, we went to school together. And anyway, wrapping up, we just decided to go and just interview players and we got credentialed by all the teams. And in up to the present, we've talked to over 1,000 players and gotten a variety of stories.
Oh, wow. Over 1,000 players. Holy shit. That's amazing.
I mean, you know, past and present, you know, major leaguers, guys that, you know, some guys that kind of bounced up and down, but, you know, some superstars as well, so Hall of Famers too. So it was pretty cool. Not every player, of course, had a story, but a lot of players, if they didn't have a direct story, they had a team story or, you know, talked about a certain, you know, place and the rumors they'd heard. But a lot of players, you know, a surprising amount of players that had actual, you know, firsthand stories or believed, you know, that certain things were going on, paranormal things were going on at either ballparks or spring training sites or hotels. And, you know, so it's kind of, we went at this and just recorded what, you know, what's out there, what's been said.
Now, what were the player reactions like when you... when you approached them to ask them about, like, ghost stories and stuff, how that even, you know, what was the reception like in these initial meetings and stuff?
You know, I thought I'd be kind of laughed out of the locker room when we first kind of went at it because, you know, players are so, you know, kind of stoic and everything. But actually, you know, it was almost the opposite. I mean, like, guys, especially, like, you know, the lesser-known guys especially because, you know, they love to talk. You know, they don't get much report journalist time, but like even the superstars, I mean, they found the question like totally disarming, you know, because it is, you know, we're not kind of going at them trying to dig up dirt, you know, of their, you know, we're asking them, you know, something that they actually talk about a lot, you know, they talk about these places, you know, they talk about it on the team buses and they swap the stories and, you know, and, you know, some of the stories are really famous, amongst players and, so it was kind of, to them, you know, it was kind of fun. And like some players, you know, it brought a smile to their face or some players kind of like took me, you know, offered me a seat and started, you know, telling me stuff and, you know, telling stories and, you know, Mickey, my co-author, got the same reaction, you know. So, yeah, we were surprised, you know, how players trusted us and opened up.
Yeah. Well, having, you know, dealt in the world of the paranormal, it seems like, you know, when someone has those experiences, they're always dying to tell somebody their story. So, and I'm sure it kind of came out of left field, no pun intended, to have someone ask them about that, you know. So it's probably like, you know, here's a great opportunity to finally tell this story that, you know, that's been sort of rattling around in the dugout all these years and stuff.
Yeah, that's a good way of framing that. I hadn't really, yeah, I mean, definitely, yeah, it's kind of, you know, yeah, in some cases, they're kind of like, you know, dying to tell it because, you know, dying, some players like said to us, I want this book, I want to see this book when it's done because they've heard, you know, some of the stories and, you know, they know that a lot more float around and they just really wanted to know what the, you know, so some cases, during the process, the interview players were grilling me as well. And then, you know, some things, you know, players didn't want to know, you know, I mean, we got a whole chapter on ashes and, like, you know, they're in our first book, Haunted Baseball, and kind of the whole ritual that fans do, especially, but even teams do, and, you know, front office folks, there's people get their ashes sprinkled in ballparks, and in some cases, you know, the teams, you know, not only do they, you know, permit it, but they actually arrange the ceremony. And so, of course, the players get freaked out when they hear about, you know, that they're diving for catching left field to be, landing on somebody's, you know, grandfather's ashes or something like that.
Yeah.
But it's definitely, they're definitely eager to know these stories too, so.
And in Field of Screams, you detail some of the, a whole bunch of different stories. I mean, both books are just jam-packed with really great stories. Perfect sort of book to pick up now with baseball season starting for folks, you know, who are going to be sitting around watching the games. And there's a lot of downtime during the game, so it's a great book for the baseball season. It seemed like having read Field of Screams earlier over the course of this past week, I found it really interesting. You know, some of the stories about these hotels, it seems like those seem to be pretty predominant. These hotels that are frequently visited by, you know, road teams and stuff like that, that have these haunted reputations. Talk a little bit about some of these stories of the haunted hotels, if you will.
Yeah, like you said, like basically in every league there is like at least one place that, you know, kind of players have trepidation about, you know, staying in. You know, even in the minors at various levels, and even like in winter ball, like in Mexico, there's a legendary hotel called the Navajo that, you know, players really hate staying at. But the Fiesta Hotel, you know, it's probably that and the Vonoia Hotel are probably two of the most famous in the game. And there have been like so many stories. I mean, literally, you know, we didn't include all the stories we had because a lot of them are repetitive, like guys saying like that, you know, things like, you know, they're hearing pound knocking on their walls and the lights going on and off, that kind of thing. But like, you know, but yeah, I mean, you know, superstars, guys like Tim Lincecum of the San Francisco Giants, you know, telling us that he thought like literally somebody was, you know, pushing against his door and leaning and kind of bending it in, you know, in the middle of the night. You know, Adrian Beltre, you know, saying that, you know, he thought there was a woman who walked past his bed with, he could smell the waft of perfume, and, you know, and then he felt like somebody pulling at his sheets. You know, just like really, you know, the stories that range from, again, like the, you know, the stories you'll hear all the time at hotels, like I mentioned, like the electrical things or banging on the walls, to like kind of start, you know, actual sightings of apparitions and, you know, those tend to be, you know, of course, the ones that freak out the players the most. Yeah, so at the Fiesta Hotel had, you know, there's stories about the owner's ghost, about Bellman walking around and various things. And, you know, of course, it all gets twisted and convoluted and exaggerated, and it's hard to tell, you know, ever get to the bottom of, you know, you hear from the player themselves, and, you know, of course, they recall it, but when they try to, you know, come up with theories about what happened and everything like that, I mean, you can hear like dozens of theories about like people having committed suicide, to murders in certain rooms and that kind of thing. And so it's hard to, but I mean, it's just kind of part of the lore. And basically Mickey and I decided early on that, you know, that's the way the book was going to have to be, because we're not paranormal researchers. We're, you know, kind of journalists, so we kind of went at this as almost folklorists, kind of recording like the stories that players have, and you know, we got all sorts of perspectives. You know, we got, you know, guys we brought in. Some cases we you know, spoke with paranormal groups that had come into these places, but we also spoke with skeptics and, you know, with people who worked at the hotels, and of course sometimes they try to you know, cover it up, or, you know, for protect the image of the hotel, that kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, we got all different perspectives on it, but, you know, definitely, you know, the Fiesta had some really wild stories.
I was really interested too, in the chapter on the Japanese baseball, because it seemed like the level of ritual was pretty amazing. And also a lot of the stuff surrounding the team in Hiroshima, which was just remarkable. Sort of how it kind of the city sort of coalesced around the baseball team and the baseball stadium there. I mean, as you say in the book, they built the stadium in Hiroshima on ground zero where the bomb fell. So it's like, that was pretty remarkable, not only that that they sort of galvanized around that, but also that you know, such a hallowed ground, if you will, became the site of the baseball stadium.
Yeah, I always loved, you know, I've been back to Japan many times too, and every time I go to Hiroshima, I loved, you know, the ballpark. You know, they've actually moved to a new stadium now, so it's not the same. It's kind of one of these more modern, you know, stadiums. But the fans are really into it. I mean, they're kind of really, you know, yeah, they do, you know, rally around their team, and, you know, literally, you know, one of the few places where there's been like fan violence and fans attacking, you know, umpires and attacking players and that kind of thing, you know, in Hiroshima. But, you know, also just, yeah, there is this sense of pride, and that there was a lot of protests when the new ballpark was built, that, you know, because people did kind of have this feel that it was kind of symbolic to have, you know, baseball, you know, kind of, you know, something that's so meaningful and important in Japan being right at that site, you know, with a atomic dome across the street, the only building that remains standing after the, you know, in you know, downtown Hiroshima, you know, in the river itself. And yeah, it was kind of, you know, intriguing that there were lots of, you know, ghost stories surrounding, you know, that whole area, and players talking about, you know, the river itself, and like seeing, you know, stories about apparitions, like people sitting, folks who are sitting, you know, at the edge of the river, and kind of, you know, and story of a player who believed that, you know, he would see the river as black sometimes when he saw it, and that, you know, of course, was the river where, you know, folks, you know, after the blast, kind of, you know, jumped into the river for relief, you know, their last, you know, few moments, you know, kind of a little bit of relief, and such. And, you know, just kind of amazing. We got like a perspective of American players that played over there, and kind of, you know, they're kind of this kind of being a little bit spooked out, or, you know, kind of unnerved playing at that spot, you know, but in general, yeah, it was just kind of amazing. And, you know, and there are other stories, and like folks, and like one player is the team captain actually for the cop, like told us that, you know, he thought that, you know, it wasn't just, you know, the blast spirit, but Hiroshima also had kind of a samurai past, and, you know, some of that may have been kind of what, you know, he actually thought he had at one point encountered a, you know, one of those ghosts, Team Dormitory. So, wow. Yeah, some really cool stories.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, the book is packed with cool stories. Do you have like a particular favorite story amongst all the ones you've heard over the years from these guys?
Yeah, I'm a you know, diehard, you know, emotional, you know, sappy baseball fan. So I love the stories where, you know, where there's kind of just some meaning to it, or things like we had a story in Haunted Baseball about this Brooklyn Dodgers fan who, when he was young, his dad took him, you know, he and his dad would always talk about the Dodgers, and it was kind of their way of kind of, of bonding, and, you know, just like, you know, a lot of, you know, parent-child relations, you know, but,
yeah,
you know, it was kind of, you know, very distinctive with him, and, you know, he kind of remembers, you know, very vividly one of his most favorite experiences was going to, with his dad, a collar skin, you know, pitching the World Series, and he pitched the, you know, shutout, and, you know, and it was, you know, it's an amazing performance, and, you know, for years and years later, he and his dad would talk about it, and one evening, you know, he happened to get, one day, you know, he became a, you know, journalist, and he secured an Erskine ball, autographed ball, and he had put it on his mantle, and one evening, like, he heard like a crash, and, you know, and he went downstairs, and the ball had, you know, for the first time ever fallen off the case. And, you know, a few moments later, he got a phone call from, you know, saying that his dad had just passed away.
Oh, wow.
You know, kind of, you know, that kind of stuff. I mean, we got like tons of stories like that, kind of like the feel the screams variety things, you know, where people, you know, but, you know, a lot of, you know, freaky stuff too. A lot of stories about Babe Ruth's ghost and people seeing him, you know, on various, you know, in houses where the roof stayed, or in hotels, or ball fields, and even from Babe Ruth's granddaughter, who kind of believes that, you know, Babe Ruth gives mystical assistance to her at times. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the weird part, too, that's sort of detailed in Field of Screams, is that the legend of Babe Ruth, and sort of the idea that these ghost sightings
They like in all the various places that he was known to frequent, whether it's in, you know, in Massachusetts or down in Florida or New York, it's like all over the place. There's very, like, every place that he that came into contact with him seems to have stories of Ruthian proportions, if you will.
Yeah, I loved researching that chapter because, you know, doing lots of research all over on, like, where Ruth stayed and where he did and just, like, contacting folks. And, you know, sometimes you talk with somebody who had had a brush with the Babe as a child, or sometimes you just talked with folks who just had stories handed down to them. But, you know, and from, you know, again, from, you know, Ruth's granddaughter herself, you know, who is also kind of an avid historian about, you know, her granddad and kind of represents the family, too. And yeah, it was just a really cool to, you know, Ruth was, you know, he's somebody, of course, that, you know, transcended the game. He was kind of, you know, this great American icon. And the more you learned about him, the more, you know, fascinating it was. You know, he's a very complex guy. You know, everyone knows that he was a tremendous partier and carouser, but he also, you know, did a lot of charity. He got in a lot of trouble because he used to play, you know, Barnstorm with the, you know, Negro Leaguers and, you know, things that, you know, that you weren't supposed to do back in the day. And, you know, he, you know, was kind of advocating for baseball to be integrated well, long before the game actually eventually was. So it's kind of really cool to, you know, found out to, you know, and the stories that I heard. Yeah, it was great, you know, great chapter to
oh, yeah.
Research.
Absolutely, yeah, it was fascinating. And it seemed like particularly interesting, too. We talked about the hotels, but it seems like the haunted locations run the gamut, really, from old hotels to old stadiums to you know, the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. So it's like these immortals, if you will, are can be found in all different sorts of places. Very sort of strange like that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, one of my other favorite stories actually was Roberto Clemente in a team dormitory down in the spring training site for the Pittsburgh Pirates in Pirate City in Bradenton, Florida. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, just the stories of players who felt, you know, spooked out staying in his room, and then, you know, some of the ghost stories connected with that, and just learning some of the history of Clemente and, you know, and both there during spring training, because he didn't have to stay at that site. He was kind of in his later years, and only, you know, younger players were required to stay there, but he kind of wanted to, and he was mentoring younger players, particularly the Latino players, and it was kind of really cool to hear, you know, some of the guys that knew him, you know, talk about, like, what he did and what he was like, and, you know, but at the same time, like, share some of these really, you know, bizarre stories about, you know, about the dormitory and about the compound itself.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, was it more sort of like the young guys had the stories, or was it like the old-timers sort of had the longer-lasting sort of stories that have been passed down over the years?
It was a mixture of both, but definitely the most were the younger guys, and that's something that we found throughout. I mean, we talked to a lot of Hall of Famers, and, you know, first we thought, like, we talked to guys like, you know, Willie Mays and, you know, Al Kaline, and generally those guys kind of, like, drew blanks when you asked them about ghost stories. There were exceptions, and whereas the younger guys, you know, stories are a dime a dozen, and kind of wondered whether part of that was, you know, kind of changes in society where now so many paranormal shows on TV and it just kind of so more openly talked about and accepted. Whereas before it was kind of, you know, you kept it to yourself maybe
yeah.
A little more, you know. So, yeah, so definitely with the Pirate City. But, yeah, I mean, like one of the cool quotes we got from, you know, one of the Clemente's, you know, a player who knew Clemente, and he became a longtime coach in the Pirates minor league system. He told us that, you know, yeah, he wished he actually did encounter, you know, Clemente's ghost. It would be, you know, great to see him again and that kind of thing. So, whereas younger guys, they were just freaked out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it does seem that way with ghosts being so popular nowadays. It might be more fashionable, I guess you could say, to have ghost stories than maybe back in the day when it would be just sort of something that would be considered silly or that you wouldn't want to admit to being scared by something like that, you know?
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
We got a longtime listener of the program who's from Detroit, and I thought it was interesting, though, that once they built the new stadium, they wanted to preserve the old stadium, and then they never then it just, like, sat there in disrepair for, like, 10 years. Is that pretty much what happened?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it was kind of, it was disrepair to, you know, to the nth degree. I mean, it was kind of like, it was ransacked. I mean, like, in Tiger Stadium, one of the reasons I think they moved was because the neighborhood, you know, kind of had crime was a little bit on the rise in the neighborhood and stuff. I mean, but it was, that was Tiger Stadium, basically, you know, it was built, this opened the same year as Fenway Park, the same day, actually.
Yeah.
And, you know, 1912. And, you know, basically had such a tremendous history. And, you know, it was part, you know, it was such an intimate ballpark, you know, and, you know, Tigers fielded some amazing teams and some great legendary players, you know, from Ty Cobb, you know, on up through Hank Greenberg up to, you know, Alan Trammell, you know, and so on, you know, played there. And, you know, so, like, you got, you know, so, like, a lot of players that we interviewed about the stadium, like, always told us, you know, those who had had a chance to play there, that it was, like, amazing to have had that opportunity to play there, and they walked around with cameras and things. And I remember Tim Hudson, you know, the Braves, telling us that, you know, he thought it was cool to use the urinal because he thought, like, Babe Ruth wants to use the urinal, that kind of thing. But in general, like, yeah, it kind of, it fell into neglect. And, you know, Mickey went through there. He actually got a couple tours through there. The second time he went through there with a gentleman from the Motor City Ghost Hunters group. And he, basically, they, you know, the place was in total, you know, there were trees growing in, literally up in the stands. You know, the field was choked with weeds and, you know, tiles and asbestos and every, you know, here and there, and furniture, like, you know, broken apart and, like, strewn all over the place. Yeah, and, you know, maybe that added to a lot of the ghost stories that, you know, some people who did work there during that 10-year span had about the place. But, you know, but a lot of, you know, security guards that we spoke with swore up and down that, you know, that there were ghosts there, particularly Ty Cobb. He was the most talked about, you know, presence, you know, and, you know, anything from him running the bases at night to, you know, encountering his presence in the hall or, you know, hearing voices and his voice and whatnot. Yeah, just other bizarre things. I mean, in the security office itself, like, guards, like, talked about, you know, sitting down and, like, one guard actually said he, like, saw scratches forming on his arm. You know, kind of really bizarre story. But in general, just those kind of tales were very common. And, you know, it's kind of really cool for us to kind of, it gave us a good, you know, reason to kind of, you know, explore such a great, you know, so, you know, great chapter in baseball history at the same time, but also kind of just to get, you know, sense of how, you know, nostalgic, you know, folks are there and fans are, and, you know, how the history kind of carries through. And that was kind of one of the things that Mickey and I really loved doing, was just kind of the idea that, you know, baseball is so nostalgic, and that history kind of, you can always feel the history, and that, you know, players who've been dead, you know, like 60 years, like Babe Ruth, are still talked about and, you know, are remembered, and people still know their personality. And, you know, there's no other sport like that, or perhaps no other, you know, American institution. So it's really kind of, you know, cool to capture that. And yes, you know, similar stories from Comerica Park where the Tigers moved, you know, you know, similar, like, bizarre things happening there too.
I thought it was talking about ballparks and sort of the moves from one old ballpark to the other. I thought it was interesting because I remembered the story of the guy who buried the David Ortiz jersey in Yankee Stadium, and I was really surprised reading Field of Screams that he wasn't, like, the only guy dumping stuff into the makeup of the stadium. Like, apparently there's Mets stuff in there, there's more Red Sox stuff in there, there's Yankee stuff in there. I guess talk a little bit about some of the shenanigans that were going on during the construction of the stadium.
Yeah, we got a phone call like in April, 2009, 2008, I forget. But it was from a report from the New York Post, and like he told us, you know, you got to keep this under wraps because, you know, I'm not going to break the story to tomorrow. But yeah, we got this guy who buried this Red Sox David Ortiz jersey in Yankee Stadium and said he put a 30-year curse on it. So, you know, so we actually, it was kind of cool to actually hear the story before it like broke. And once it broke, it was like crazy because it was the Red Sox Yankees rivalry is so crazy as it is. And just the idea of a new curse born and like some going to that extent. And yeah. So Mickey and I, you know, we knew when we, you know, Haunted Baseball was pretty out there, but we knew when we were writing Field of Screams that had to be a chapter. So we just started interviewing. We interviewed him and it's, some construction workers, and you know, we already knew that back when Yankee Stadium was first built, that you know, in the records of a construction company, White Construction Company, and they somebody jotted in the margin that he'd thrown a good luck in the water pipe, you know, underneath Yankee Stadium, and you know, you could always say there was already superstition already, you know, there, and they won that their first World Series that year, and then won all, you know, tortured, you know, Red Sox fans for another century, practically. In general, we talked to Gino, the guy, Gino Castagnoli, who buried it, and he just mentioned, like, yeah, I know some other guys, and he just mentioned a couple names, and we started talking to them, and then we talked to more guys, and, you know, it turns out there were lots of guys, you know, as you mentioned, that had buried stuff, and one guy, you know, he told us that he'd buried the 2004 World Series of coins, the year the Red Sox, you know, broke the so-called curse, you know, in all four of the major footings of the stadium, you know, so like a lot of things that weren't, you know, the Yankees, when they found out that, you know, the Ortiz jersey was in there at first, they, you know, denied it, and then, you know, when, you know, some other construction workers came and said, yeah, we saw him do it. You know, they went in and they actually jackhammered, you know, through like 5 feet of cement and spent like $50,000 unearthing it, you know, so, but still, you know, even though they did all that, there's still like many other things buried there that have either good karma and bad karma. One Yankee fan actually, a Red Sox fan actually, for his friend, he actually buried his Yankee fan's ashes and, Section 208 of the ball. So yeah, little kind of battleground, I guess, for the soul.
Yeah,
stadium.
Like a supernatural battle between different factions of fans and stuff like that. Pretty weird. Yeah. Now, I presume then, based on just the sheer age of like some of these teams and everything, but that some of these new teams don't really have the sort of same. Sort of traditions, I guess, of spirit hauntings and whatnot. You know what I mean? Like, do teams like the, you know, like the Diamondbacks and the Rockies and stuff like that, do they not have the same kind of traditions, really, of weird stuff since they're pretty new?
Yeah, not as much. I mean, like, obviously Yankee Stadium and Fenway, Yankee Stadium probably has the most ghost stories from the perspective of players. And, you know, Fenway Park has in Wrigley Field in Chicago and, you know, a few others, you know, from perspective of workers and Dodger Stadium too, from fans. I mean, but like, yeah, there are newer parks that, you know, I mean, like, you know, the Toronto, I still call it the Sky Dome. I don't get the latest, you know, they change it every 2 years. Rogers Center, I don't know if it's still that, but they basically, you know, the player Miguel Batista told us that, you know, he had a encounter with what he felt was a spirit of a Native American. He himself kind of claimed, you know, kind of that of, you know, Indian ancestry. He's Dominican, but the Taino Indians, his grandmother was, descended. And so he, you know, he thought that, you know, he also played a Native American flute, and he was down beneath the stands one day before a game relaxing, you know, playing it, and he claims, you know, that the flute got swatted out of his hands and flew like 5 feet, you know, away. You know, similar stories from, you know, other new parks. Actually, you know, you mentioned the Diamondbacks, and that definitely might even, you know, very newer than the Blue Jays, of course, you know, and they had an expansion team. They had a, stories from the 2001 World Series that we talk about in in Haunted Baseball. After September 11th, there were ghost stories from players and from fans about, you know, the spirits, those, you know, who died at, you know, in the trade towers, you know, being present during the games, you know, the World Series, at Yankee Stadium. But, also, you know, Diamondback, you know, players like guys like Mark Grace and, you know, thought that, you know, there were some bizarre things happening, you know, at the very end of game six when the Diamondbacks clinched it, you know, kind of this wind swept, you know, funnel kind of going along in the field and thing, you know, and just kind of, you know, just some really eerie coincidence. I can't recall the exact details, but
yeah,
we wrote a pretty, you know, kind of the timing and the exact time that things happened. But yeah, you know, players were convinced that something was going on there too. So, I mean, it's not all, you know, of the, you know, it's not all of like past players and of Babe Ruth hanging around and that kind of thing. Sometimes it's, you know, some stadiums are thought to be built over burial grounds and Anaheim, you know, it's legendary among players where players feel that that was built over Native American burial ground. And, you know, we've got curse stories and tragedies from there that players feel were connected with, you know, with that, you know, to that fact. So yeah, we have a few workers at Anaheim Stadium who believe they've, you know, seen ghosts there. And one guy who, a longtime bat boy, who even claims that he would see like Native American faces and, you know, bodies within the walls itself. And, you know,
oh, wow.
Sometimes like he felt like they were chasing him down the hallway. So, you know, some new stadium teams too have these stories.
Yeah. Yeah. And in the Anaheim, chapter, you know, you guys talked to one guy who's worked there for like a long time, you know, and you almost feel like that he'll end up like perpetuating this when he dies almost, you know what I mean? It feels like it's almost like a self-perpetuating thing where these guys spend all their time in these stadiums, you know, on the overnight or as the clubhouse attendant or something like that. And these are some of the best days of their lives. And you think to yourself, you know, 10, 20, 30 years from now, you know, these will be the ghosts of the stadium, if you will. I mean, I can imagine that if I was in those positions, I'd come back after I left and went to the great beyond, if you will. So you wonder about that kind of thing, too. You know, it's like the joy that many people feel being associated with the game, they don't never want to leave, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, so like players, like, and workers actually kind of express that a little bit, you know, where they talk about, you know, that respect. And one, and I mentioned that bat boy, and he also like saw like you know, even saw like players and ghosts and such. You know, Anaheim has had a lot of tragedies, and you know, connected with that curse too. You know, car accidents and other bizarre things that, you know, players getting shot and killed, that kind of thing. Most recently, Nick Adenhart, you know,
yeah,
who died. Yeah. But you know, I mentioned he was a bat boy, and one of the, you know, players and former players and coaches that he saw the most was Jimmy Reese, who was a former player. I actually roomed with Babe Ruth once, but even before that, he was actually a bat boy back in the 19-teens with the Angels when they were a minor league franchise. So, you know, it was kind of cool that connectedness, you know, that, you know. And he didn't express it up, but it was just something that, you know, Mickey and I were thinking about as we were writing the book.
Yeah, yeah. It's sort of like an unspoken thing. You don't want to say to somebody, well, when you die, you're probably going to be hanging around here too, pal. You know, have it not go over too well.
On this day 6 years ago, some guy in Houston ran over an elderly man while going after a home run ball. And this woman took the law into her own hands and started whacking the guy with her cane. Bravo, honey. Bravo.
Seriously, she should have just gotten up and just whacked him across the face one. And why is this guy sitting there letting her take the heat?
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Dan will tell us stories he's heard about hauntings at Tiger Stadium and the Arrowhead Pond in Anaheim. I don't think that's the name of the fucking stadium. Arrowhead Pond's not where they play. Angel fucking shit.